Hey, good afternoon. My name is Ryan Funk, here with you on UMFM. Welcome back to UTalk. It's a program dedicated to diversity, highlighting native-born and new Canadians' cultures and experiences. We have some awesome stories to share this week. A founding member of Immigrant and International Women in Science and the organization Asian Women of Winnipeg discuss mental health. In this modern era, education in the fields of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math is growing in significance. However, for many immigrants, even if they are qualified, the barrier for entry here in Canada can be quite severe. Shweta Rajan experienced unfair biases and microaggressions from colleagues and employers beyond cultural and language barriers. And as she entered more senior roles at businesses, she created spaces where diverse voices are valued equally and discuss those issues, a place that she didn't have when she first started her career. That eventually evolved, along with other women across the country, into Immigrant and International Women in Science.
Well, yeah, I was born in India and I moved to North America, to the US first in 2000. And then I moved to Canada after the economy collapsed in the US in 2008. So I moved to Canada in 2009. And I have called Vancouver home since then.
First came to Canada. What was that experience? How was it kind of, going from the United States, adjusting to that culture, and then coming to Canada?
Yeah, it was interesting because when I moved to the US in 2000, I had the opportunity to travel across the country. And as a part of that, I had looked at all different places in the US as a way of trying to figure out where do I feel most at home. And as I was exploring this, I got into grad school and then had to come to Canada, to Vancouver, actually, to get my passport stamped because of the change in status. And as I was going through the process, I landed in Vancouver and immediately felt this sense of, this is where I want to be. And so because of that, when the economy collapsed, I was looking for opportunities, and I was having, as an international person in US, I was having a really hard time trying to find a job because of the H-1B status requirements. And but thankfully, I'd already gotten my PR citizenship process approved. So I was already a permanent resident of Canada. And so I just packed my belongings, got into my car, got on I-5 because I was in California at the time, and drove up north for 2 days straight and landed in Vancouver. And it's not a choice that I regret making. I have always felt more at home in Vancouver than I ever felt in the US. And there is just a sense of belonging here that I never quite got when I was in America. The people are wonderful there. I have lots of extended family and friends that I've made over the 10 years there. But yeah, there is just this indescribable feeling of belonging that I have here in Canada that just really pulled me to this country and has made me call this place my home. I actually remember very clearly, I was going through, when I was driving up the I-5, I landed, and as I crossed the border security, the person handed me back my passport and said, "Welcome home." And I've just never forgotten that incident. So yeah, it's different, but it's really just, yeah, this is home. I don't know how else to say it, but this is home. Yeah.
I mean, that's a great way to just put it. Like, you know, you get to a place and it feels like home. You mm-hmm. just get there and you're like, yeah, this is where I was kind of like meant to be living. What was life kind of like before moving to North America?
Oh, yeah. So I grew up in the Indian Army. My dad was an Army officer. So I grew up traveling. And so traveling is something that I have loved. And India is a very vast and diverse country. We have different cultures just jostling with each other every 2 kilometers feels like. So, and I grew up trying to integrate all these cultures together in my, so these cultures were all integrated into my upbringing. And so I've always valued different perspectives and the richness that comes with integrating them together and valuing them together. So that's something I personally value. And that's one of the things that I feel is great that we have in Canada, you know, baked into our culture is a lens towards respecting diverse views and being multicultural. So yeah, and that is something that I carry with me everywhere I go. Yeah.
Yeah, I can agree with that completely. You know, coming to Winnipeg for school, like I got so many new experiences and met so many different people. I grew up in a community that's very monocultural. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So everyone's kind of like believes the same thing, thinks the same thing. So you're like, well, it's good to have some conversation and learn. Like, you can't just have the same meal every day kind of thing. Yeah. So like, I definitely understand, you know, wanting to embrace other cultures and learn about them and experience them. So why not, let's talk a little bit about, you know, the not-for-profit mm-hmm. that you've kind of started up and the work there, as well as the background. I mean, in your profile, it says, you know, you've been heavily involved in, you know, creating that safe space for cultures in the workplace. And you're at this organization to help immigrants get into their, like, technology and STEM. Was this spurred from a personal experience, why you wanted to get heavily involved in this?
Yeah, so one of my first experiences when I moved to U.S., I got into grad school, and unfortunately, I faced some bullying and harassment, and it went on for about 3 years, and I took a really big hit in my self-confidence, how I viewed myself, in my mental health, in my productivity, for sure, and the fact was that as an immigrant person who was new to the culture, I did not even recognize when I was living this experience that what I was undergoing was not normal. It was not acceptable. And so when I moved on from that, when I was let go actually from that project and I moved on to do other things, there was this key question that remained in my mind that I was looking to find an answer to. And it wasn't so much about the bullying and discrimination that I had faced, but it was more about how come in the 3 years that I had been there and I had so many colleagues surrounding me, no one had stepped in and no one had offered any support or even just asked a question about how are you doing? And so moving forward, I always looked, wanted to create, be that person that I didn't have when I was working there for others. So whenever I went to any organization, I looked to make sure that any person who was coming through would be able to come to me with any challenges that they had. And that became like, and so I was always kind of looking to build these connections with people. And that is actually can create a psychologically safe space for them. I didn't have the language or the words. It was just, I was practicing these things. Psychological safety, I'm not even sure. Maybe it was in the beginnings of being even coined. And there was no language for microaggressions that I was facing. So, but in practice, I was practicing these things. I was educating people about microaggressions and how bullying or harassment can look differently. It can have a very different form, and also creating the safe space. So off all of these things, I started practicing creating inclusive cultures. And so when I moved on from I completed my career as a scientist in about 2015, and having worked with organizations where I was able to have more of an impact in creating culture as I took on senior roles, I wanted to take that on full time. And I was in a career gap. I was trying to figure out what to do with, you know, how to progress ahead, because as I mentioned, I didn't have all this language for psychological safety or microaggressions or even people and culture, having worked with small and medium-sized organizations all my life. So as I was looking for that, I've always been an active mentor, and people have reached out to me, and I was looking for some support as I was going through this experience, to just provide support and form a community for others who were going through similar experiences. And as I was thinking about that idea, someone approached me, someone I looked up to as a mentor. She approached me and she said, "Look, I'm thinking of starting this thing. Would you want to come do this with me?" And I'm like, "Yes." And coincidentally, something very similar was happening across the country in Ottawa. One of our colleagues had moved, and she was looking to create a community, being in a place where she didn't have a lot of other people to support her. And we are all immigrants, so we really understand how it feels to come to a country without the social network, without having the social connections, without having any kind of social safety net built for you that you can lean into in it as you go through trying to find a job, trying to understand a completely new culture and all the stressors that come with it, trying to, you know, make sure that your finances are holding up as you move through this. And so we formed Immigrant and International Women in Science. I mean, it started as just a group of women meeting. We didn't have an organization, we didn't have a name, we didn't have anything. We just wanted to see if people wanted to come chat with us, and found out really quickly that we had tapped into a niche, and we had tapped into an unmet need in the community in across Canada. I believe that we are the only pan-Canadian organization which offers this kind of support for women in STEM fields. So now we have 8 sister chapters across the country. We have a very active volunteer leaders of over 25 plus people who volunteer their time to hold events and engage in social media and spread awareness about what it takes. And so we engage across a lot of different platforms, and we've to date held about we've been here for about 2 years now, and we've held, I want to say, 30, 40 meetings so far. And we pivoted to Zoom meetings, virtual meetings, during this pandemic. And when I say meetings, I mean themes, topics. We've had more, because when we had held in-person meetings, we would be having 8 meetings across Canada every month. So we've done tons more, I think. So yeah, and it's been incredible work. I've been amazed with how much support and interest we've gotten from different people, and just how we're able to build this community and support women. I strongly believe, and IWS was formed from that belief that we all shared when we formed this organization, is the wisdom of the community, the learning that we can all get from sharing our experiences is higher than the wisdom of any one subject matter expert. And so we value all different perspectives as and look to respectfully engage in how we engage with each other. We've been able to do some really good work that I'm very pleased about. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, it just sounds amazing. Like, you have a group of individuals all inspired to create those opportunities for each other and, you know, start that dialogue. That's just fantastic. I love that. So what are some of the challenges that immigrants, particularly female immigrants that are coming here, that are facing to get into either technology or STEM?
Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the interesting things for me as I started looking more into it. And very recently, just about I think about 2 weeks ago, there's been a report that came out with a study from, I believe, Northwestern University, but I might have the university wrong. But they conducted a study which shows that Canada actually is one of the worst offenders in their hiring practices in discriminating against immigrants, right, in the developed countries, in the OECD countries. At the same time, there has been a report, a different report, different study done, in that now 60% or more of Canadians actually view immigrants favorably. So there is this difference in that Canada is getting more and more accepting and understanding the value of what immigrants bring to the table when they come into the country. But at the same time, there is still these barriers to making sure that immigrants, particularly immigrant women in, you know, who are looking to enter male dominant fields, that they face in integrating into getting jobs. More specifically, you know, there have been two studies done, one by Vancity in Vancouver, looking at the percentage of immigrants who get the expertise, who get to work in the field of their expertise, and the rates are, and they didn't do gender, they didn't look at the gender desegregated data, so it's just for all immigrants, and it's 50%. So only 50% of immigrants who come to BC, which is, you know, one of the most diverse places in Canada, as Vancouver especially, is only 50%. So for women, that ratio is probably, just knowing what we know about intersectionality, that ratio is even worse, right? And this rates are very similar in Ontario as well. So there is this very particular problem, and there's a lot of different things that play into it, but one of the big things is trying to understand what is it, trying to evaluate what is it that immigrants are bringing to the table. So recognizing their credentials is one big thing, but also just helping them give that support network, give them the access to networks. When you are from Vancouver, you're already, because it is a smaller city, you know, like compared to say San Francisco, we are all very heavily reliant on hiring from within our network. So as an immigrant coming in from outside, you're already cut off from that. So one of the biggest sources of getting into the job market, or even knowing about what opportunities there are, is not available to you. The second thing is, many of the companies do not have a social media presence, and they may or may not actually put out jobs on LinkedIn, which charge so much. So you might actually have to go to Craigslist. I actually went and found the job that I eventually applied for on Craigslist, right? So, and this is not obvious to a lot of people that this is where you would want to look to find jobs. So there are a lot of different things. Understanding the labor market is another big one, because so many in Canada, 90% of the companies are 50 people or less. So they're really small size companies. And so many people, especially if they're immigrants, they're not aware that these guys are hiring. And as you gain experience, they might not need full-time. So you might be a project manager. A small company is not going to need a full-time project manager. So you might have to think about hiring yourself out as a consultant, or, you know, setting up yourself as a self-employed person, which is a very different shift in mindset that, you know, again, a lot of immigrants might not think through. So there are all these different things that is not available to the immigrant population that we are looking to help solve, just educating them on, and just like guiding them through the process of what does it look like, where would you find the jobs? There are so many government jobs that people might not be aware of. So across the board, we try to educate them on how to go about through these processes so that they can have some support in understanding the challenges. as well as, you know, we also try to, you know, especially since my article in CBC came out, a lot of companies have reached out to see what they can do to help support us. So to just engage with them and form this kind of bridge between organizations who are looking to find great talent and help, you know, job seekers to introduce them to different perspectives that, that might not be super obvious to them when they come into the country. So that's kind of how we look at it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's good to hear to...
I
good
hope
to hear
that answered your question.
No, that was great. That was great. And I mean, it's good to hear that there is change that is happening for the better. I mean, slow, but I mean, mm-hmm. progress is always slow. But like you were explaining, that sort of advice can apply to anyone for getting into the job market.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, as an immigrant, you're coming in and you're adapting and changing and trying to fit into the work environment here in North America and in Western culture. How do you stay connected to your cultural roots and kind of your heritage while still adapting to the workforce?
Mm-hmm. That's a really great question. You know, I have a new baby. My son is 6 months old, and we just had a Diwali celebration a couple weeks ago, which is something that one of the festivals that I from India just enjoy a lot, and it has just lots of just really lovely memories for me that I want to stay connected to. And so my partner is from Canada. He grew up in the Comox Valley, and, you know, we are at his parents' place right now. And so I requested, I said, can we have these celebrations? And they were like, yes, let's do it. And so we lit the whole house with candles. We put up the trees that, you know, we lit up the tree with or the plants inside, put the lights up on them that they do in during for Christmas. And, you know, we had sparklers on and things like that. And we had a really great time. And they really enjoyed coming to know about my culture and what I brought in. And, you know, I had a great time celebrating my culture. So you have to find a space where you can do these things. You have to make time for them. And it is, you know, that's one of the things that companies can do. You know, when Diwali, one of the things I often struggle with is it doesn't always fall on a weekend. This year it did, but it doesn't always fall on a weekend. And so if I'm rushing from work or whatnot to get it started, get all my celebration, and then I might or might not be able to celebrate it. So, you know, if organization want to support their immigrant employees, offering them 3 or 4 days of vacation, optional vacation that they can take whenever they feel like for celebrating, you know, whatever festival they want to, is a wonderful way of showing that, you know, we have these statutory holidays that we as Canadians all want to celebrate, but there are so many more, and we can't integrate all of them because, you know, we do that in India, and that's a lot. But you can provide optional days off to people who might be wanting to celebrate things that are rooted in their own culture. And so I make time for it in small and big ways. I like color. I bring color in whenever I try to make a purchase, you know, whether it's a piece of clothing or shoes or, you know, in my home. So yeah, the different ways that you can bring in your own culture into your life on an everyday basis. So yeah.
So it sounds, if I can like kind of steam up all of the conversations we've had right now, it sounds like conversation is key in everything.
Yes. You know, one of the things is that we are often, I think all of us grew up or at least a lot of us grew up to avoid difficult conversations or uncomfortable conversations to maintain peace. In my country, in my culture, making someone who is your guest uncomfortable is a really big sign of disrespect. So I was brought up in that. However, if you avoid conversations around challenging topics or things that might have you lean into discomfort, then you will never be able to engage in a different perspective. So, and though it might be uncomfortable, as you go through these uncomfortable conversations together, we understand that we have a lot more shared values that we share together than things that divide us or keep us separate. And what I believe is that, or I dream of, is a world in which we connect because we have shared values, not because we share the same color of skin or the same accent or were, for whatever reason, born in a specific piece of land, arbitrarily distinguishable from another piece of land. That's what I hope for, and that's what I'm working to.
Immigrant and International Women in Science have chapters across Canada and continue to work to ensure everyone has a voice. We'll hear from the Asian Women of Winnipeg in a moment, but first, let's listen to artist Marco Castillo with Pensamento.
O pensamento é rápido, a atitude nem tanto. O pensamento é rápido, a atitude nem tanto. Escrevo um verso pra evitar o pranto. Escrevo enquanto posso, mesmo quando posso parar. Se eu paro, penso, escrevo um verso, um frevo. Qualquer motivo que me abrace, que te faça dançar. O pensamento é rápido, a atitude nem tanto. O pensamento é rápido, a atitude nem tanto. Escrevo um verso pra evitar o pranto. Escrevo enquanto posso, mesmo quando posso parar. Se eu paro, penso, escrevo um verso, um frevo. Qualquer motivo que me abrace, que te faça dançar. Eu não preciso de ninguém pra me dizer o que fazer. Se a vida é bela, sem novela, na janela do saber. E sigo só no meu caminho, penso muito em você. Pego a viola na estrada até o dia amanhecer. Pensamento é rápido, a atitude nem tanto. Escrevo um verso pra evitar o pranto. Escrevo enquanto posso, mesmo quando posso parar. Se eu paro e penso, escrevo um verso, um frevo. Qualquer motivo que me abrace, que te faça dançar. Eu não preciso de ninguém pra me dizer o que fazer. Se a vida é bela, sem novela, na janela do saber. E sigo só no meu caminho, penso muito em você. Pega a viola na estrada até o dia amanhecer.
with this ongoing pandemic keeping us physically apart from loved ones and friends, and, you know, with the winter here and just that cold bite, you know, reducing activities even more, many are struggling with mental health, and it can be easy to feel overwhelmed or depressed. And because of this, many mental health services and clinics are seeing a spike in use. The Asian Women of Winnipeg discussed mental health with host Joyti Kalsi and guests Dr. Zahra Safiri, Rita Shahal, and Sharon Tapia. They tackle various mental health topics, including mental health in immigrants, refugees, stigma, and services.
Hello, bonjour, sashrikal, namaste. Do not be pushed by your problems, but be led by your dreams. Today, we are in segment of AWOW and You Multicultural, covering a very important topic that does get overlooked, but it is essential to talk about and take away the stigma that is associated with it, which is mental health. But moving on, we will be addressing it as emotional wellness. I do have very important guests with me today who are very experienced in their own industries and doing a lot to our community to take that, making their own efforts in taking this mental health to emotional wellness so that people can talk about it and be comfortable about it, right? So starting off from the left side, I do have Dr. Zahra Safiri, who is a award winner in law and medicine and is working at University of Manitoba in research in diabetes for Indigenous youth. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Next, moving on, we do have Rita Chahal, who is the executive director of Welcome Organization. I believe one of the organizations that does welcome all the refugees and provide all the support they need. Mm-hmm. Welcome to our show as
well. Thank you for having me.
Yep, it's our pleasure. And next on, we have Sharon Tapia, who is the founder of AWOW, that is making this whole initiative to bring AWOW and You Multicultural together. Welcome to our show again. So I would like to start, you know, we're talking about health. I would say I want to start with you guys. How do you guys feel today? How are you?
Very, fantastic. Very good. Fantastic.
That's very good to know. And, you know, this is the answer we often get. I'm very well. I'm doing okay. I mean, it's just a, you know, thing that just comes out naturally.
That's
but
right.
Hardly, I believe, you know, people really think that. How are they actually feeling it? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just want to have the stage open to you and let us talk about it and, you know, bring it all out. Why do we just step into, I'm okay, and we don't think about anything else behind?
I think one of the things that happens is that, you know, when you're suffering from a cold or it might be something physical, you know, that ails you, you recognize it. You know, the person across the room from you will say, oh, you sound stuffed up today. You have a bad cold. And that's easy enough because people are open to, and there's no stigma around those things. However, not everyone knows what's going on inside of you. And so we tend to simply, you know, brush it off and say, oh, I'm okay today. Oh, yeah, not too bad, without really thinking about or wanting to let others know how you're feeling inside. So it's a way, it's almost a guard that you have just to keep yourself, you know, keep that wall around you without sharing what you're really feeling.
Right. I would like to add a point to this, that it's completely true, but sometimes you want to open up, but the other person doesn't have time or is not interested to listen, so it's a kind of mutual reaction that we say, hi, I'm good, and the other one is expecting that I say I'm good. They're not expecting make it long or I try to open up about whatever is happening in my life, so it's a kind of two-sided story.
I agree with that. Definitely. Yeah. And did you want
to add? I think the same way. I think this is a fast-paced culture we all live in. And who has interest in you? Mostly people ask you how you're doing for the sake of
formality.
Asking or a routine thing, and they don't even have time to listen if you even say, yeah, I'm okay. You know, I don't think they pay much attention even in the tone of your voice or the way you dressed up, maybe, you know, if you look okay or not. But yeah, health Otherwise, health, I consider, is a combination of your physical health, your emotional health, and your
social health.
And your social health. And we always happen to say about our, think about our physical health, and we say we are okay, you know, even though we are not
as
okay.
As long as you're not feeling any aches and pains or fever, you're
we
okay.
We consider health is yeah. is only physical part, but this is not true, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And, you know, there's a report that I found online. They did say that mental health, which I would say, I mean, it shouldn't be worded that way regardless, but, you know, I would say emotional wellness, right?
Right.
It is the fourth biggest cause of disabilities. And it's said by WHO, the World Health Organization. And right. they have said by 2020, it will be the second cause. And soon by 2030, that would be the first cause of disability. So for sure, you know, people tell when you're at networking events, the quickest way to start a short talk, right? Because you don't know, you want to start the conversation. Is it like you start them, how are you? And people now use weather as another yeah. resource, right? So these conversations could be very, very, you know, deep, and you could talk about stuff. It could be work-related, and you still talk about your stuff and, you know, get into detail. And these topics could be explored more and talked about more other than attaching any fear or stigmas to it. Mm. So considering, you know, we have already taken off appeal that health is not only
physical
health, it's internally what's going on in you. Mm-hmm. So what does, you know, mental health, why do you think it's important, and what does it mean to you?
Do you want to talk about it?
I think the mental health is of how you feel.
Right.
Right? It's more about the feeling. And as you were saying, the stigma around it, the moment somebody asks you how you're doing, you definitely will not have the courage to say I'm feeling down or good, because in our society it's expected from you, you know, you're going to make impression, oh, I'm great, I'm my business doing great, and maybe next day people will hear you committed a suicide, and people will say, oh, I just met this person yesterday and they never said anything, they were always happy, they were always flying high on the cloud nine, and all of a sudden you think, you know, you hear other things. And it's just the society painting a picture of you always as a happy, as a having a perfect life. But
I agree with you, Sharon, that there are those high expectations that others put on you in terms of you needing to be positive, you needing to keep your life together, get a life, as some people will say, go get a life,
right.
And things like that. And that adds added pressure. So I think that sometimes we you have to have a comfort level and a trust level to be able to share what's inside of you with others. So I think there's a lot of factors that go into emotional well-being. I like to think of it as mental well-being and emotional well-being, because those are some of the things that we deal with our clients that come, is because it's not always easily visible immediately, and because of some of the things that they have experienced over time, and that we start to see those impacts of those life experiences and the trauma that many of them have experienced later as they start to get settled in Canada.
Right. But, you know, the question again comes, why there is a fear associated? Why do they fear about talking about these topics? Like, you know, I mean, I understand. They are afraid that we will people will judge us. But, you know, things like, if it is on a personal level, that's a different story, right? Mm-hmm. But when people moving here, and you deal with that mm-hmm. on an everyday basis, refugees coming here, but
yeah.
people are still afraid. Why do you think, you know, they don't want to open up?
Well, for us, one of the things that we observe with our clients is that when they first arrive in Canada, many of them have left very, very difficult circumstances. War, political unrest, religious persecution, a lot of things that you and I probably, you know, would never be familiar with. But they do. So when they first arrive, they're almost in a euphoric stage, because they're so happy to be just safe,
right,
and
yes.
have a, and Canada has accepted them. But when the reality starts to set in and they start thinking about what they've left behind, and of course many of them left good lives behind, nobody chooses to be a refugee.
Sure.
And so when they come here and then they're having to deal with the realities of here, maybe they had other expectations and didn't meet those expectations. But also the psychosocial trauma that they bring with you, it starts to come out. And the reason then they start to open up with us is because of now they've established a bond and a trust with us. So our counselors can start to recognize some of the symptoms that they're experiencing, withdrawing, crying often will be a thing. Sometimes it's rage, sometimes it's a response to a sound.
Okay.
And so our clients are able to pick that up. And then we're not a mental health specialist, but what we can do is we start to recognize those and we make sure that our clients are referred to the appropriate interventions and medical professionals who can give them the guidance, who can give them the medication, who can ensure that they are hospitalized or get the psychosocial support and intervention that's needed. So that's, for us, that's an important part of it.
Definitely. Yeah.
But I think you are dealing with those
people who just migrated. That's right.
But many immigrants come, and that's why this condition is rising in the new immigrants more. Mm-hmm. And as you said, in 2030, this will be the first reason for the death,
yes.
Which is very, very sad. Even when people coming as a new immigrant to Canada, for them it's a big change. And then leaving their comfort level at home, mm-hmm. new country, new language, you have to make friends. There's no family support system. And then family back home have high expectation of you. Now you are in Canada, then you can send some money, financial help, because people come for a better life and
right.
people want to give their loved ones a better life.
Definitely.
And how they are adjusting in this country, weather-wise, friendship-wise,
socially, culturally.
And the loneliness kills them too. All these things bring them into that kind of a state. Not everybody is lucky that you will end up meeting good people. People don't know which way to go, how to make friends.
Even like starting your career, that
exactly.
leads to a depression, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you have briefly already touched on it, but I was going to, request you to shed more light, because we are bringing this in a way to bring awareness to the people that if you're facing this, it's okay to.
Right.
So,
okay.
I mean, maybe you might want to, together from all your experiences and backgrounds that you bring in, like what are the few things that people can relate to that, okay, I'm going through this and it's normal. Like what are the things you might want to,
It's just acceptance, I believe.
Yeah, I think, if personally learn to accept and that it's okay to cry. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be angry, and so those, your personal acceptance, I think, is probably the number one. And then not putting those expectations on yourself that others have put on you. So
right.
being able to respond. So that would be a tool that I think that would be helpful for people.
I wanted to add a point to these points that they're absolutely the right points. But the other thing that we should emphasize on is that the people who are immigrating are not the only one who experienced
right.
these
right.
sure.
this,
sure.
problems.
Yeah.
We should tell everyone that you are not the only one.
Mm-hmm.
We are all together. I mean, based on WHO reports, the extent of the problem is so broad. So
Definitely.
We know that everyone
global.
May, yes, it's yes. global and everyone is maybe suffer from
right.
this problem. So. The point that we emphasize on that you are not alone, you are not the only one who is experiencing these problems, make everyone hope that I'm not alone, we are all together, we will be strong together.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to give you some numbers that because of all of this that I may think that I'm the only one who is experiencing problems in my life or I have some problems to deal with. I don't seek help because I think that I'm the only one and maybe I will be assumed as a weak person
right.
or anything. But based on WHO reports, just 2 out of 5 of people who are suffering from a problem about emotional well-being, they seek just help. Two out of five. We should talk and we should tell everyone that, oh, I have this problem and I'm seeking help. And if you have this problem, we can talk together, we can communicate, and we can be stronger together. So
I agree with your point, absolutely. So when we have, if we are diagnosed with cancer or right. with a heart condition, right. we will immediately go out and seek help. Our family will be there supporting us and saying, okay, what can we do? Whether you're going for chemo, right. I'll drive you here, right. I'll take care of you, I'll cook for you.
There will be social support.
There will be a social support because it's physical. And right. people can see it. And however, if someone has the courage to share an emotional concern or something that's deep inside that is impacting their emotional well-being, people tend to shy away from it. People are not sure how to deal with it. I'm not sure how to help this person. I don't know if this person is going to commit suicide. I don't want to be responsible for those kinds of
right.
things. So there's always
that. We are not raised that way.
That's right. So there is a social stigma across all communities. It's not just the newcomer communities or any women for that matter, or even teenage. It's across the board. The stigma that we put on ourselves and the stigma that others put on mental health, or if you want to call that, or mental well-being, is one that I think has to be first addressed.
Yes, sure.
Yes. I think when a child even, let's say, cut himself, a 5-year-old,
right.
even that child knows to go in the kitchen, get the Band-Aid box out, and put a Band-Aid on it.
Right.
I think it's the raising of the belief system from very beginning, but nobody talks about their feelings, mm-hmm. how you feel, you know? And I think emotional strength yeah. is actually handling your feeling, good or bad, either way. If we start teaching our kids, and as you know, we are saying it's not just the immigrant people's problem, it's not Syrian refugees or other refugees who come to this country. It's not only they are going through mm-hmm. the trauma.
Sure.
Every day we feel trauma. Our teenagers look at the world they are facing, which we never faced when we were growing up. I think we have grown up in a very protective and safe environment compared to our kids today's society. They are living in the global community, and the drugs on the road, the internet freedom, and the availability of all sort of bad habits, or whenever they feel bad.
All sorts of vices that they can be exposed to.
For right? them to go out and instead of talking about it, they will rather drink and waste their
right.
evening or days or even life for some people.
Right.
It's very sad because I think we are not raised that way, or this is not part of our
education
from the day one.
And even we are missing what was being done in our families, like that together, getting on
the evening dinner, you talk and you share,
this is what I went through whole day.
And
you
that's
know, parents are busy.
Yeah.
Kids have their own things to
loneliness.
Do.
You know, loneliness is more in this country.
Yeah.
When nobody to talk to.
Then things, cliche is that, for lack of a better word, things like a family that prays together stays together, a family that eats
together
stays together. Those elements of our daily lives are slowly eroding.
Yes. Yes.
Because, as Sharon said, our lives have become so busy. We are so tied to those devices that we each of us are dealing. You have one on your lap right now.
Yes. And it's funny, sometimes four of us sitting in the house and everybody's on their laptop or
families have a television in each of the bedrooms and everyone is watching the television in their
And that's the one reason actually we don't have TV in the bedrooms. And from the day one, we didn't have the TV in our bedroom. And I am grown up in a house where we had our auntie, uncles, grandparents. Now here I come, but there are no grandparents.
Yeah.
The gap we are missing in kids' life, and look at all the nursing homes, the mostly the grandparents or the older people sitting alone, dying with the loneliness, and kids, grandkids are suffering here because they don't have anybody to talk to.
The support system.
You know, the support system is gone, and that's why this problem is rising every day.
Yeah.
And that is something they need to, you know, think about, seriously think
right.
about. The government need to address this issue. The society, the way it's going now, it's going to kill. It's going to kill
the
youth.
There's a saying that, you know, it takes a village to raise a child.
100%.
And that is so important for us to remember that,
right.
That there are so many elements that go into, you can't raise a child in loneliness, you know, by yourself.
Yeah.
It takes a whole lot of other, a support system.
Yeah. And that's leading to all these cyberbullying.
We are working on after-the-fact issues, yes.
Which actually arise from, you know, we can fix them
from the seed.
Yes.
The verbal communication, the eye contact,
is
the physical closeness
yes.
of being, are yes. so critical in helping, you know, us to feel needed, to feel wanted. At the end
yes.
of the day, every single person wants to feel needed.
Right.
They want to be
loved.
They want to be. They want
heard.
To feel important.
Yes.
That they're making a difference.
Right.
You know, something else that that comes to my mind that I think is often ignored, and you raised it a little bit earlier, is the postpartum depression, from the very beginning when you, new moms. Have a new baby, there are that often gets ignored. I mean, there is more light being shed on it, but
mm-hmm.
I think that's one area that we need to be talking a lot more, encouraging moms to be aware of what happens to their bodies mm-hmm. because their bodies are changed,
right.
Getting a new life into your life has a whole lot of other implications. But that's another area that often gets discarded. I mean, we spend a lot of time teaching them how to feed, how to clothe, how to take those first pictures in those first 10 days.
And those prenatal classes.
You know, but we don't talk enough about the emotional, what the mom goes through. I'm a grandma, and so when my daughter-in-law had her baby, one of the things that I talked to her about, I said, you know, you need to think about this issue. You know, be careful about it. It creeps up on you without any warning. So it's something that you need to think about because all of us have at some point or another experienced that.
Yeah. Thank you.
You know, Ben, I just want to share my own experience about the postnatal depression.
Postpartum.
Yes. And then when I had my first baby, I was in the hospital, like, you know, and there were like so many patients and somebody was crying so loud. And I said, you know, I just got scared. Mm. I thought something happened to the baby or something. The mother mm-hmm. was crying. And they said, she's going through a depression. Mm. And for me, this was a cultural change for me because I was,
sure.
you know, like 2 years ago, I came from India. For me, having babies in the family is the happiest moment. You know, we've seen celebrations. We see all the friends, family,
the
everybody coming.
Giving.
Yeah, and the giving the sweets, you know. And I know, like, nobody will ask, like, I seen my mom, you know,
right.
like, have, when I had little brother sisters. And I was thinking, why the hell, like, she's crying when she had the baby. And the funny thing happened, after all the celebration, even the hospital, we had so many friends. And I remember one of my husband's colleague's wife, she came and she asked me, actually, like everybody say, congratulations, congratulations. And she asked me, Sharon, how you feel now you are a mom?
Hmm.
And guess what? I started crying.
Just that sinking feeling
yeah.
comes in.
Mom.
Somebody is
yes.
Is
she said,
you're
how you
asking
feel?
About me?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
And that word, like how I feel being a mom. And I said, you know what? I said, Mrs. Sharma, this is such a big responsibility. I don't think I can do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I really don't have any experience.
Mm.
I hope I, you know, I can raise this child to be a good person, a good citizen. Because if you do something wrong, people will always point fingers toward your mom.
No,
your
definitely.
Mom didn't do a good job.
Definitely,
right?
Definitely. So
we raised with that sort of thing. And I was thinking, and that time, from that moment on, I think I missed my mom so much, and she was in India. And for the first 2 years, I was writing my mom, you know, a letter every month or 2 months. When my daughter born, I wrote her almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
End of the night, I was writing her every
wow.
day because the amount of hard work I was doing, I realized
mm-hmm.
my mom really worked so hard.
So you were actually talking to your mom, although you were writing letters,
yes.
but you were actually talking.
Yes.
This is what we need. We
yeah.
need to vent it out.
Vent it
when
out.
We keep on keeping it inside, because people find hobbies like painting, like, you know,
outlets for
outlets. And that's why I brought
and
up cyberbullying. People are using that more
so
to get their frustration
now,
out.
Now
right?
the devices that we carry in our hands have become those outlets, and they're the lack of communication, direct communication, has I think compounded the mental health wellness.
This is very, very interesting conversation we are having, and it's hard for me to, you know, actually bring it to an end, because for sure there's a time limitation we are bounded by. But I would definitely, you know, want to talk to it, and maybe we can
continue
in the next you know, segment that we get here at U Multicultural. But maybe quickly, as we have like left 30 seconds on the show, I would really want somebody to step on and tell me, like, what do we need? What infrastructure maybe you might want to have our viewers to think about?
I would say that there are huge gaps in the health system in dealing with mental health issues. There just aren't enough supports and resources available. So I would, this being an election year and election time, I would urge politicians, and I would urge ordinary everyday citizens to demand resources and allocation of funds to be able to deal with mental health issues and mental well-being.
Did you guys want to add something?
I just want to add to encourage everyone to open up and talk about the situation. I guess if the more that we talk, especially those like that are high profile people, the more other people would feel comfortable to talk about and bring up the issue.
Thank you.
And I would say, you know, to start talking with yourself first and see how you feel, where you are. If nobody's there to listen, at least start writing. Remember your good deeds. And forgive yourself first. If we all make mistakes.
There's nothing wrong with feeling overwhelmed or daunted. And many may be feeling isolated or depressed as we huddle down, help reduce the spread during this COVID-19 pandemic. You're not alone if you feel this way. And if you are struggling with mental health, there are services available to help. And there are people who love you. Thanks for listening. Tune in to UMFM every Tuesday afternoon at 1 to hear more stories from amazing people across Canada. I'm your host, Ryan Funk, here on UTalk, and have yourself a good one.